This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. Actually, I'm not driving home. I'm driving over to my daughter's house again because of the same reason as last week. We're going over to practice our improv. It's very interesting. It is very interesting. It's, very interesting. So, we have the teacher now that we were supposed to have originally, but she was working on something else. And so now she's actually back. And so it was our first class with her. And she did a good job. It was a good job. But she kind of, you know, pushed us a little harder, and then the founder did, and she kind of kept us moving, you know, through the various scenes, and gave us more evaluation as we were going. And also because this was class number 5, I think, it was fifth week. I can't remember. Anyways, I think in part because of that, we're all kind of getting to know each other now as well. And so we kind of know what each other's strengths are and what our weaknesses are and kind of where people go. And so like I've told you about Old Man Willie, he's great. But with Old Man Willie, we just kind of know that it's going to go to the curmudgeonly old miser. And so we just sort of play on that because we know that's where it's going. So let's just go with that. So that works out okay. And so we did some scenes together. And you know, whether I should feel this way or shouldn't feel this way, obviously I don't always come up with what I could come up with if I had a little time to think about it. By the same token, things are starting to settle in. And so, you know, I don't think we're going to have any trouble putting on a little show. I mean, it might not be the most serious side-slapping show, funniest show that we've ever had in existence of improv. But, of course, it's all newbies, and so you wouldn't expect it to be. But at the very least, we will be able to do scenes, which that's the whole point of this 8-week training, to get you to the place where you can actually do an improv scene. And I think we'll get there. So it's fun. It's fun. Enjoying it a lot. And at this point, I find it highly likely that I'll go ahead on and take the second class. Highly likely, because it's a different skill, and it's a team thing. It's a team thing, and I don't have much of that in my life. I mean, I have stuff where I'm on teams, but like I go do my work and they do their work. It's not something that's like this, where it's just, you got to be on right now. So it's fascinating. The writing is going fine. Some really interesting, what I consider to be interesting things. You know, you hear these Bible stories all your life, and then when you actually get looking at them, you realize that, wait a minute, that's not the way I thought it was. One of them has to do with the young man who ran away during the arrest scene in the Garden of Gethsemane. And when I was telling my wife about this, she said, I don't remember that. And I said, yeah, the young man who's there and he's just dressed in a linen garment, and then he tries to run away and they grab hold of his garment and he runs away naked. And she said, I don't remember that at all. And so I went to Mark. It's in Mark, I forget where, Mark 14, something like that. And there's just one verse. There was a young man following them wearing a linen garment or linen cloths. I forget exactly what the NIV says. And they tried to seize him, and he left the cloth behind and ran away naked. Okay. So, which in Judaism, that was kind of, you know, to be naked was a huge embarrassment. So you have to bear that in mind. Okay, so we're never told who this person is. People suspect that it was John Mark, who is attributed to have written down this gospel, thus the Gospel of Mark, based on what Peter was telling him. But there's no, you don't know who it is. Well, the story gets really interesting. As I've been reading commentaries on it, there are a lot of commentators that go, oh, well, that's not a factual story. That's just like, it's just like an illustration. And the reason they say that is because, first of all, if it was John Mark, it means that he left Jerusalem to go to the Garden of Gethsemane, which is a mile or two from Jerusalem. At this time of the year, it probably would have been 50-ish or so degrees, 50, 55 degrees out. Seems a little cool to just be wearing a linen, thin linen garment and nothing else. So, well, maybe that he got alerted and he jumped out of bed and he didn't want to get dressed, but it's, you know, it's over a mile. And so that's like a 20-minute to 40-minute walk. It's a mile or two to get to the Garden of Gethsemane from where he lived, because if he lived in Jerusalem. So that's a little weird. The next thing that's even weirder about it is that it's not really linen garment. It can be translated as linen garment. But the only other place that that particular Greek word is used in the Gospel of Mark is when it talks about when Joseph of Arimathea bought a linen cloth and wrapped the body of Jesus in it. So it's like a linen winding cloth that is used for burial. It's not even like sheets on a bed. It's a linen winding cloth that's used for burial. It's curiouser and curiouser. So I took all that and I wove it in, and I hope it's not too much, but, you know, it'll be okay. I actually wove it in, and I didn't make it John Mark. I made it somebody else, so it'll be fun. Anyway, so I've got to get that stuff finished up. I've got to get the arrest scene done, and then the trial scene, and leading up to a portion of the crucifixion, and then I get the big scene, the darkness. Maybe it's the darkness. It's probably the darkness. It may just be the dark. I don't know. Anyways, that's really the pivotal scene of the whole book. That's when I have to be on. So we'll see how that goes. Anyways, this week, because I'm going over to my daughter's, you know, I'll be talking for about the normal amount of time, but I've already chewed up several minutes of that. So this week, I read an article several weeks ago that piqued my interest, and so I saved it and went back and read it more closely last night, made some notes. It's a pretty fascinating article. It's kind of cute because the author of the article, Charles DeHigg, I think is his name, D-U-H-I-G, Charles DeHigg. The name of the article is How Companies Learn Your Secrets. And I've seen this in other reporting on the web, where there's a title of an article, and you start out, and they start out, you know, going through what the title of the article is actually about, and then you take like a left turn. So I don't know if they get paid by the word, and they just need to pad stuff out, and so they just add stuff they think is interesting, and it does sort of tie together what he's talking about, but this is one of those situations. But overall, this is very interesting. He got talking about Target and how there was this guy who worked at Target in 2002. His name was Andrew Pohl, and he was a statistician. He was a mathematician that Target had hired to be a statistician. And one of his jobs was to look at what people are buying and try to deduce things about their lives. Okay. So that's pretty interesting. One of the things that they wanted him to do, I'm winding my way through a subdivision is what I'm doing, which is the reason that the car noise went down. And that's pretty interesting. And one of the things they wanted him to do specifically is they wanted him to predict which of their customers was pregnant. And the reason that they wanted him to predict which of the customers was pregnant is because pregnancy is a very key time for marketers at stores like Target. Because everything is up for grabs when you're pregnant in terms of your buying habits and where you shop. A lot of what we do in terms of our buying habits really comes down to what we get used to and what we get in the habit of doing. And once we establish those habits just pretty much keep churning along. For instance, on Saturdays, I go to Walmart Supercenter. I go there, I shop. That's it. Are there other places that might be better? Perhaps. Where do I go? I go to Walmart Supercenter and I shop. There's another Walmart Supercenter that might actually be a little closer to me. Do I go to that one? Not unless I have to. Which one do I go to? I go to the one on Kansas Expressway every Saturday morning and shop. Because that's my habit. So what they wanted to know was, if we can identify women who are pregnant, specifically in their second trimester of being pregnant, and we can market to them, that is a prime time when we can change their habit. So he started working on this and eventually was successful at this. Now, the article takes a big detour around, but I'm going to finish up the pregnant story first, and then we'll talk about habits, which is what the rest of the article is about. So he did actually figure out a way to do this by looking at a specific set of products. I think he ended up with something like 25 different products that women who were pregnant tended to buy. And it's funny because the author was talking about the fact that when he first started doing this research, the people at Target would talk to him, and then as he started to tell them what his article was about, then they stopped talking to him because they didn't necessarily want him talking about this. But they said, for instance, if a woman comes in and she buys a really big handbag that can double for a diaper bag, and if she buys calcium and zinc and a few other things and buys a bright blue rug, then from that, because she's buying accessories that are bright colors, and she's buying minerals, and she's buying something that could double as a diaper bag, from that they can deduce that there's probably an 87% chance that she's pregnant and she's going to be giving birth in X number of months. It's fascinating. Really, it's fascinating, the statistical work they're doing. Of course, they have huge amounts of data available to them. Several weeks ago, we talked about big data, and this is one of those big data things. They have huge amounts of data available to them. Now, they don't actually know who the individual people are, although they do sometimes. And of course, if you come in and pay with cash, they lose track of you. But anytime you use a coupon, anytime you're in one of those shopping clubs, anytime you're you use the same credit card over and over again, anytime you do any of that, they give you a guest ID and they track you. And so be aware of that. You know, one of the things that I've always been I didn't want to join any of those shopping clubs is because I knew they were tracking me. But, you know, they really can't just track you if you use the same credit card or debit card every week, which I do, so it's kind of silly. Anyways, so they track you, so they can tell from point to point what you're buying and what your frequency of habits are, when you usually shop. They've got all that kind of stuff. And then they can start correlating as well. And that's all this is about, correlation. So he was actually able to develop this and, in fact, got so good at it that it actually brought about some rather interesting things. They had one story that this author had about a dad who walked into a Minneapolis store just furious. And he had a whole handful of coupons, and he was furious. And he was saying, he said, "How dare you send these coupons to my daughter," you know, his teenage daughter. "How, what are you trying to make her think she wants to get pregnant?" Because they had sent her some coupons for diapers and these kind of things. And then the dad wrote them an email like the next day and started apologizing and saying, "Well, apparently there's been some things going on in the house that I wasn't really aware of. And in fact, my daughter really is pregnant. And so, sorry." And through that, and through other instances, Target learned you really just can't start sending really, really, pardon the pun, targeted coupons. Because it will creep out the pregnant women. Like, how do they know I'm pregnant? So what they do is they send out flyers and things that will have, like, lawnmowers and guy stuff. And then also have coupons for diapers and and toddler clothes and baby clothes and those kind of things in it. All because they're trying to get to people when their lives are in turmoil. Because when their lives are in stress and in turmoil, you have the best chance to hook onto a habit and use it for your own purpose. And this was really the second big part of this article that was very interesting, was about habits. And basically, he talked about in the article that habits come down to three things. They come down to cue, what starts the habit, response, what do you do in response to the cue, and then reward. What do you get because you do this? Because people will not continue with a habit unless there is some type of reward. Sometimes the reward may be pretty opaque, but it's there somewhere. There's some type of reward. He did recount an interesting ad campaign by Febreze. When Febreze was first invented, it was an odor eliminator, and they marketed it as, "Oh, got bad odors around your house? All you have to do is spray this, and oh, it smells fresh. Isn't that great?" Didn't sell. Nothing was happening. Nobody cared. And they finally figured out that the reason nobody cared was nobody could smell their own smells, or if they did, they didn't think they were that bad. They said one lady, one in their marketing group, she had like 8 cats, and her house just reeked. And they were asking her, "So, how do the cats smell?" "Oh, yeah, it's not too bad." So what they had to do is they scrambled around, and they finally found some users of Febreze. And there was one lady that would, like, take it with her, and she'd go into a room, she'd tidy all up, and then before she left, she'd just kind of spritz the carpet, and she'd spritz the couch, and then it was like, yeah, ta-da, it just makes me feel like everything's clean now. And so instead of trying to create a whole new habit, i.e. use this to eliminate odors, what they did is they camped onto an existing habit. You clean your house anyways. Why not just use this as that final thing, and then you'll have the reward of knowing it's really clean. And so then they put out a whole new ad campaign that had people cleaning, had people doing the sort of normal chores, but then they just tacked this on of, look what a great reward this is, because now you spritz this stuff and everything is fresh smelling. And sales took off. And they said the big principle to learn there is that when you're trying to change an existing, when you're trying to actually create a new habit, it's much, much harder than if you just find an existing habit and camp onto it. And from that, the guy gave the example of himself where he would get a cookie every afternoon at work and sit around and gab with the people. And because of that, you know, because one cookie leads to other things, obviously, he actually had gained some weight, and he decided that he wanted to lose the weight. So on the basis of this cue, response, reward, he sat down And he started saying, okay, is it, what is it really? What's the cue? Am I hungry? Or is it just the fact that it's 3:30 in the afternoon? He eventually decided it was really more 3:30 than he was that he was hungry, because he brought in apples and ate apples, and that really didn't stop his yearning for a cookie. Eventually, what he figured out is that his response and the reward he was looking for was not necessarily eating the cookie. It was socializing. So he said, what I started doing was right at 3:30, I would get up from my desk. He said, and I would go to where everybody, you know, was snacking and stuff. And I would stand there and socialize with them for 10 minutes. And he said, and then I'd go back to my desk. And he said, I didn't need the cookie, because he figured out what the cue response reward was and what the elements were to it by doing some experimentation, and found that his reward really was just being able to socialize with people. And that's why he was getting up from his desk, and that the cue was 3:30. There was just at 3:30, he knew it was break time. And so that was the cue to do something. His response was getting up from his desk, and having this cookie had folded in with the real reward, which was socializing. And if he focused on that real reward of socializing, he could diminish his interest in having the cookie, which that's pretty interesting. And he was saying that in the article, that marketers and stores and things are always looking to create this cue response reward pattern in you, because they know if they can get that ingrained in you, then they'll just keep coming back to them. But he also said that once you realize it's happening, it's not that hard to stop it. You just have to make yourself aware of it. So I say all that to say, if you've got something in your life that you're fighting, like one of the things that I fight a lot is staying away from crackers, just regular old soda crackers. I love soda crackers. And if I'm not careful, like I did last Friday, I will go get a pack of soda crackers and some butter, and I will just eat like a third of one of those sleeves, which is not great. I'm still sort of recovering from that. But I'm going to try this on that. I'm going to say, okay, really, what is it that I'm looking for? Am I looking for salt? Is that really what the reward is for me doing this? You know, I mean, it's salt and fat, and that always is a trigger. But is there other things that I can get? Or do I just feel like it's afternoon and I'm home by myself and I'm writing, and am I just low on glucose? And so I'm looking for something to pump up my glucose so that it'll be easier to write. Because if that's what it is, then spreading out my feedings during the day would help with that. So I'm going to look for this. What is the cue? What is the response? What is the reward? Is it that I just get to the place where I need to think a little bit, and so I need to be away from the computer? Because that's what it is. I'll just walk around the house for a while, because I can think while I walk, and I can get my exercise too. So it's very, very interesting. It's very, very interesting. And there may be some things in your life that you might want to look at and say, you know, these are bad habits that I don't like. So what is the cue? What is the response? And what is the reward? And can I take this and turn it to something else and leave the habit in place, but change what my response is and change what I'm looking for a reward? Anyways, this is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it to my daughter's house. Have a great week.